future is now. And welcome to the SBK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name's Charles Story. I will be your host for the next 15 minutes. We're coming live from the City of London, Shoreditch. Today's show is going to have a slightly different format. We have Patrick Lowry, who's the CEO of Iconic Lab. Patrick recently shared a panel with Shane Kehoe, co-founder of SVK Crypto, here in London at the Cryptocurrency Investor Show. Iconic Lab is a seed funding wallet and accelerator. They source, fund, develop, and accelerate the crypto blockchain startups. So let's jump into the interview and hear it from the man. So on the show today, we have Patrick Lowry, who's the CEO of Iconic Lab. Patrick, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing phenomenal. And where are you in the world today, Patrick?
Oh, just landed in Philadelphia. Doing part of the roadshow for Iconic Lab. We have major events coming up in Los Angeles and New York, but always have to find time to spend a little bit with family. I'm originally from Philly, so actually currently in my old bedroom from high school, kind of bringing back some old funny memories. My parents still have all these damn trophies hanging up somewhere as if people are actually looking at them.
That's cool. At least you can look back on your achievements and successes thus far.
Yes, I suppose. It's more just a bottle of old liquor that I had pretty much hidden when I was in high school. Can't drink in the U.S. until you're 21, right?
Could you give us a quick background to the listeners that haven't heard of you or have heard of Iconic Labs thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll kind of just start with a brief personal introduction. I mean, I'm originally from Philly, as I've already stated. Went to the University of Delaware, got a degree in finance and accounting, and started working at PricewaterhouseCoopers, or PwC. And during that time, I did the audits of mutual funds, hedge funds, private equity funds, got my CPA license before transitioning into private equity. Worked for a private equity fund here in Philadelphia for about 3 years, at which point I met my now German wife. And I kind of lost that battle. I guess it really wasn't a battle to begin with. I was always going to end up living in Germany. So we moved off to Germany together about 3 years ago. And during my time in Germany, I finished a MBA at the Frankfurt School, as well as worked with Deutsche Börse's venture capital team, Deutsche Börse being the German stock exchange. And when I was with Deutsche Börse, we started looking very heavily into the blockchain space, obviously, because there's a great use case for blockchain in a stock market operator. And being the VC arm, we looked at investing into some early stage companies. But that is when, probably around mid to late 2016, I guess it would have been, some of these companies turned around and rejected our LOIs, saying, oh, you know what, we would rather do an ICO than accept money for equity. And that's kind of where we threw our hands up in the air and said, okay, what the hell is going on here? Because these were not cryptocurrencies. They were not native blockchain protocols. They were real world business cases, right? So I started doing some heavy research into the space and working with some of the contacts, blockchain devs that I had in Berlin, and ideated ways that we could better leverage my investment management backgrounds alongside their blockchain technical knowledge to jump into the crypto space. And I started to convince myself of the propensity that tokenization has to displace equity as a means of financing for these early stage companies. Now, some, not all early stage companies. I want that double underlined, some. And in doing so, we kind of ideated Iconic Lab, where at first we thought, oh, you know what, we'll launch a crypto hedge fund. That's kind of what all the cool kids are doing. That's what you guys are at SVK are doing.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to take a more traditional approach. And I wanted to actually capture value at the early stage level, identifying and sourcing those real world business cases of the blockchain, real world use cases of tokenization, providing them the seed financing that they need to get to the point where they're ready to do their ICO, and bringing them into a cohort, establishing best practices, developing their marketing strategies, connecting them with the legal minds around the world so they can do this fully compliant, and then accelerating them to their own token sale. And that is where Iconic Lab came to fruition. We started early last year, but since then have evolved precipitously, where in addition to being this ICO accelerator program, we wanted to allow a decentralized group of investors to kind of leverage our due diligence and developmental procedures. And we felt the best way to do this was through our own token sale. So we're currently in the midst of it, actually. We closed our pre-sale, sold it out earlier this year. And what our token offering is it allows its holder to have exclusive access to the highest bonuses and discounts of all of those companies that graduate our accelerator program. So if you hold the Iconic Lab token, you effectively have a curated deal flow of companies that have had proper due diligence by a group of VCs performed on them, and then they've been developed to have a real-world business case through the accelerator program, and you also get the access to those high bonuses and discounts that traditionally only the Bitcoin whales, family offices, or VCs have access to. And this allows us to truly decentralize the venture capital ecosystem.
Right. And are you guys familiar with Simple Token? Because I believe they've ran this the kind of similar project. I don't know if you've heard of that project
before. Oh, absolutely. No, they definitely work on something similar. However, we don't identify them too much as a competitor. Rather, it's more companies like CoFounded, Superbloom, IcoBox, Bazaar Capital out of Moscow that have a slightly similar concept to what we have. However, we're the only company out there, or at least that we're aware of, that is actually investing into these companies prior to their sales, getting them the capital necessary to the point when then they are ready to do their own ICO.
So with you guys being in the space for just over a year and having your background working at some of the most prestigious firms in the VC space as well, what would you say the biggest problems are in the ICO space at the minute? What would you say they are?
I would say that there's plenty. I mean, you could just run a full gambit of lists of issues that there are. One of the biggest issues I see is over liquidation of these projects. There's no reason for what are effectively startups to be raising tens, hundreds, if not billions in capital in these token sales. For instance, Telegram's looking to do 2 billion now. I think they've closed recently 1.7 billion just in private sales before even having a retail sale. Just absolutely ridiculous. They have no justification for the need for this money. Even companies that are just raising 100 million, even Filecoin, there's no justification for such over liquidation for this project. They haven't even been very transparent about what the use of this funds will be through their ICO. So over liquidation, definitely number one on my list, because I believe long term, ICOs will carve out a niche for themselves that will be roughly in the post-seed to Series A financing round, something around the ticket size of 5 to 10 million. Maybe for something a bit more developed, you could push 15 or 20 theoretically. But an ICO should be used not as a means for financing. I do believe this. I think an ICO should be used as a means to create a tokenizable business model in the sense that you can better leverage the network effect through tokenization by addressing the needs of your end users, effectively incentivizing value transfers within the ecosystem you're trying to create. And you can do so while still having that non-dilutive funding through this post-seed Series A financing tool. But what it effectively would allow you to do is generate better KPIs, generate better user awareness, generate better incentivization for movements within your ecosystem that you're creating at an early stage company level. And theoretically, that would allow that company to scale significantly faster than a traditional venture style. And in doing so, you then open up the opportunity for future financing rounds for those types of companies that would be Series B, Series C, or D rounds through the generation of that ecosystem and the decentralization of value transfers within that business model. That's kind of a long-winded answer, I guess, to the over-liquidation aspect. So other issues, of course, are regulation. In this regard, a lot of people will look at this and say, well, you know what, there's in crypto, there's no regulation, it's the Wild West. And my response to every single one of them is, The regulation exists. We know what it is. You're just objectively choosing to not abide by it. For instance, every country in the world has securities laws. We know what they are. Every country has tax laws. We know what they are. The only real gray area is in which instances do these laws apply? And this is where it gets tricky. Because, as you know, there are securities, there are currencies, there are services. And I think if we can just view this as those three general buckets that regulators look at them as, it's very difficult to classify cryptocurrencies and tokenized instruments into those three buckets. Whereas everybody is saying, oh, well, I'm a utility token. Well, you might have elements of a security, right? And we just need a bit more clarification on that aspect. So it's not that regulation doesn't exist. It's that we need more clarity as to what regulations apply in which instances. And this is where it gets difficult because the usability of tokenization, the usability of these digital goods are only limited in their use cases by human imagination and creativity. Tokens can represent theoretically anything ranging from real world assets to services, to digital goods, to currencies themselves, as we're seeing. And security regulators, as well as other legal authorities, really need to start expanding those buckets, that there are intermediary bucket periods between what the traditional securities law, financial registers, and goods laws provide for.
Well, it's interesting you make these points the way you do, because what I've found as well from being in the space for over a year and a half, nearly 2 years now, at SVK Crypto, we've found that access to market for some of these ICOs is getting harder and harder and more expensive. So let's say 2 years ago, having an ICO probably cost you $20,000 to $50,000. And now some people are spending a couple of million on this. So it's becoming more of a VC type structure in a sense. What's your view on this, Patching? Where do you see this going? Do you feel that it's going to keep on becoming more and more expensive to run an ICO? Do you feel that's the right way to do it with the whole ethos behind the community? I mean, what's your view on that?
It's kind of funny that you put it this way, because there's a few things you have to take into context here. One is that traditionally people that are running ICOs are native technologists, cryptologists, or those that have been working in the space for some time, which means, frankly, and I don't mean to offend anyone, they have no business sense whatsoever. They have no concept of ROI. They have no concept of actually managing and running digital campaigns. So they flock to people that have been doing these, the individuals that are promoters in the space, the high paid advisors in the space. And they're paying that initial upfront fee, which has a ridiculous 10x premium for those services just because it's a crypto expert. So it has a lot to do with these people lacking business sense for these high prices. The other side of this is they're running these absolutely massive Google campaigns, where even we had one company in Frankfurt spend a couple million on Google only to raise about 20 million. So the ROI on that is frankly just non-existent. On the flip side, you've had companies that have spent $3,000 total in marketing. And they did a pure content marketing platform, constantly pumping out new content on Medium, new articles, positioning themselves as thought leaders. And they raised 30 million. And that was actually 30 million pounds. So, I mean, whatever the equivalent of that is in euros or dollars, I don't know. If someone in your audience can do the math. That's an absolutely massive ROI. So it's not so much about spending an ungodly amount of money on marketing. It's about identifying the right channels, identifying your target audience, and finding the best resolute path to reach them and do so in a capacity that makes sense. So for instance, at Iconic, we've tried to test absolutely every aspect of a marketing campaign simply because we wanted to learn as much as we could on all the different styles of marketing campaigns you could theoretically have in running and managing an ICO so that all of the companies in our accelerator program can leverage our learnings. And the first thing that we learned is Google is a completely worthless campaign. But that is by and large the absolute largest marketing expense that every one of these companies is paying for. And that's where you're seeing the 5-10 million marketing campaigns. The other side of this is going with a traditional content marketing standpoint, going with organic outreach through airdrops, through meetups, through events, if you can do this properly, you can actually severely limit your marketing expense.
Well, it's an interesting point, because I actually disagree with marketing altogether in the cryptocurrency space and blockchain space for that matter, because the best projects that have come through, as you said, have spent little to no money on marketing. But what they have done is they've built amazing communities, and they've been extremely proactive in growing those communities, whether that be a community of developers, a community of analysts, whether they're a community of investors. The community is key, and you see this with all great projects that have entered the market and done incredibly well.
Exactly. And if you can build that community, build that group of supporters, you go viral within crypto. I mean, you could really kind of tell who runs a good ICO campaign, who has a good platform versus who spends on Google and social media versus who doesn't. And so you could probably eliminate any project that you want to be a part of as an ICO if you see they're spending millions on crypto, because here is an additional problem. That money that they're spending on this massive Google campaign, the only reason they have that is because they raised it in a pre-sale. Now, if I'm wanting to do an ICO and I do a massive pre-sale, let's say 5 million, how does that show responsibility in money management if I turn around and spend the majority of this on a massive campaign just to have a larger public sale, right? There's kind of a bit of moral hazard at play here, because you're now taking your investors' money to then go attract more investor money. I don't understand the thought behind this. And this is why there's no real business managers in the space. These are people that are just out there to make a buck. And those are projects you should absolutely be staying away from.
We won't mention any names while we're on the show. But yes, I've seen a few like that. And I'm sure everyone else is who's listening as well.
Oh, yeah, we know who they are. But yeah. Let's not name names, because of course we do want to still instill positive energy within the space. So you know what? If somebody goes out and spends a massive campaign and they raise successful money and then they deliver the product, sure, hats off to you. But what you're seeing is people raising a lot of money in the pre-sales, not putting any of that into product development, but dumping it into a public sale just because they want to sell off the tokens that their pre-sale investors had at a 80-90% discount or bonus.
Which is absolutely ridiculous, and something that's not sustainable in the space and the way we're growing as well.
And that is exactly the problem that we're trying to solve at Iconic. And we're doing that by providing seed capital necessary to get these companies ready for the point where they're doing their pre-sale, doing their public sale, and creating that captured audience of investors, the ICNQ token holders themselves, that have quality assurances as far as the investment that we're proposing to them by the companies that graduate the accelerator. And the accelerator companies can severely limit their own marketing spend by having that community that trusts the Iconic Lab brand, that trusts me and my team of VCs and investment managers to identify worthwhile projects on their behalf.
And Patrick, can you speak about some of the strategic partnerships Iconic Lab have done thus far? Because I know you guys have been super proactive in building this out, and I know a lot of the listeners would love to learn who you guys are currently working with.
Yes, absolutely. So I would say our primary strategic partner is, of course, FinLab AG. FinLab is a publicly traded German fintech company builder. They have a market cap on the Deutsche Börse of a couple hundred million at this point, I suppose, which is actually fun. Go back and look at FinLab's stock price, its volatility over the last couple of months. Ever since they invested in Iconic Lab, it's hilarious. They've pretty much just followed the same crypto gambit almost to a T. It's hilarious. But anyways, FinLab is our biggest strategic partner in the sense that we share deal flow together. They help us and our companies develop because they are very well-established and well-regarded fintech company builders. And they've helped us expand exponentially our investor network and reach. And even more so, we had that's actually what I was at Token 2049 with Brendan Bloomer to announce. FinLab will be launching a $100 million fund for investments into native EOS projects. And Iconic Lab will be collaborating significantly with the launch of the fund, be invested through the fund, as well as be the accelerator body that will take the companies that the FinLab EOS fund invests into to the next stage for their token sale through the accelerator program.
With Iconic Lab, you guys are looking to basically source deals. And how are FinLab AG helping you do that? Do they give you deal flow, or do you give them deal flow, or how does that work?
We effectively give them deal flow, actually. The initial thought was, okay, FinLab has a few companies that they've invested into that could be tokenized, or they have companies that apply to them. That could be a fit for accelerator program. It's actually quite the opposite, and it's funny how this turned out. So at Iconic, a lot of companies apply to us, but they're not ready to do an ICO. I would probably say 90% of the companies that seem interesting from our perspective, we pass off to FinLab, and we pass off to our massive network of traditional VCs or angels and family offices to tell them, look, you need strategic money on your cap table. You need to do a traditional fundraise, build your product, build your team, build your brand, and then we would love to work with you to take you to an ICO. Because we focus on quality at Iconic, where we want to have companies that already have a working prototype, a beta, maybe have even gone to market already and gotten that user feedback that they can tweak. And we are just looking to create a tokenized business model around an already established piece of technology. And that's where we can provide better quality assurances to our own investors, the ICNQ token holders, because it's not just investing in white papers or landing pages anymore. They're investing in existing businesses, and they're investing in existing real-world cases that are just merely tokenized through coming through Iconic Lab.
I mean, I see this all the time, I'm sure you do, with businesses looking to raise money who are looking to have an ICO but actually have no real use case using a blockchain or using a token within itself, and they've basically tried to implement that within their business business plan to try and raise capital in the crypto space. I mean, do you guys, what's your view on this, Patrick? I'm sure you see this all the time as well.
Yeah, we turn those companies away right away. No, because I think at the end of the day, a lot of the applications that we get are, oh, we are a native protocol that is going to be scalable. Okay, well, how are you going to be scalable? Oh, because we have mathematicians or statisticians that are going to create a cryptographic language leveraging coding that exists in Bitcoin, Ethereum, or what have you. And we're going to increase block size, we're going to decrease latency, and we'll be the first scalable blockchain. I'm sorry, piss off. You wouldn't believe how many applications like this that we receive. Now, if somebody comes to me with something that is workable, that has a test net, that looks like it exists, that can be scalable, if you know the meme from Futurama, take my money, right? I would love to be invested through something like this. It just doesn't really exist yet. This is actually why Iconic is so bullish on EOS, and why we're working with FinLab on the $100 million fund. A lot of the other companies that apply to us, they have really good ideas. They're not necessarily hashed out, but they are kind of just at that earlier stage, not exactly ready to do an ICO. It's very difficult for these companies to grasp a good token model. They don't have a native use for blockchain, nor do they have a native use for their own token. And I think those two need to be distinct, that you can still tokenize non-blockchain projects. I mean, look at Iconic Lab. We have a great use case for our own token, but we do absolutely nothing with blockchain outside of the fact that the ICNQ token exists on the Ethereum mainnet. And it's about identifying those projects that have a great use case for tokenization, that have a good use case of a blockchain in the real world that will drive sustainability within the ecosystem.
Do you think that Iconic Lab will look to switch to the EOS blockchain instead of having an ERC-20 token once everything's up and running?
We've explored this significantly. Actually, out of the 5 companies that are currently in our accelerator program, 3 of them will be going on EOS. The other 2 are actually their own native protocols. But that will be something that will be explored significantly in the near future, and has been done pretty precipitously over the past few months as well.
Great. That's what I love to hear. And what's the vibe like in Frankfurt at the minute for the crypto and blockchain space? Is there a lot of meetups going on? Are people aware of what's going on, or are people still kind of a bit unsure about the whole space?
Frankfurt being a very conservative financial environment, and even exponentially more conservative because it's a German conservative financial environment. I would say that there is a lot of cautious optimism in the space. So you have a lot of bankers, a lot of family offices, a lot of fund managers in Frankfurt that are reaching out to us because they just want to learn about the space. Frankfurt itself is, I think, a bit behind the times, but everyone is excited about the opportunities that we have presented to us through cryptocurrency. And in this regard, so actually, we just had a major blockchain summit in Frankfurt last week. We had it on Thursday, April 26th. We had about 1,500 people turn out, and it was absolutely spectacular to see this mix of people that are interested in crypto, as well as all the major banks, all the major institutions, Deutsche Bahn, Porsche, Innogy, all the major German corporations that were participating in this. And we had overwhelmingly positive feedback, not only for Iconic, but the five companies we have in the program, for the real-world blockchain use cases that we're trying to develop and promote. Because crypto needs to position itself as not just these cryptocurrencies and these projects, but rather actual use cases. And when you start to attend these events and have more traditionally minded people see the actual merit of the blockchain use cases you're building, everybody gets very excited about this. Because then no longer do they look at this and say, oh, it's just another ICO. They look at this and say, oh, this is something that is delivering value through tokenization and through the blockchain tech itself.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Patrick, we're going to wrap things up. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And anything we can do at SVK Crypto, please let us know. And anything our community that we're always building on in London can do, please let us know as well. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
No, I really appreciate it. And I'm actually looking forward to it. I think I'm coming to your event in June. I think it's June 16th. You guys are having it the next meeting.
6th, which is a Wednesday, and that's going to be held at the Grand Connaught Rooms in Holborn. And yeah, we're going to be rolling that one out. So we're really excited to have you down there as well as one of our special panel guest speakers.
Now, I'm really excited to be there. I look forward to seeing you, Shane, and the rest of the SVK team. I really appreciate it.
Great. Well, listen, have a good time in Philly and safe travels back to New York.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You've been listening to an SVK Crypto Podcast original. Follow us on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Email us on cstory@svkcrypto.com. Leave us a message on our website, www.svkcrypto.com.